and you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul D'Arienzo in national news. Anguished families plan funerals in two U.S. cities. Politicians pointed fingers, and a nation numbed by gun violence wondered what might come next Monday as the death toll from two weekend mass shootings rose to 31. The attacks, 1,300 miles apart at a packed shopping center in El Paso, Texas, and a popular nightlife stretch in Dayton, Ohio, also injured dozens more. President Donald Trump cited mental illness and video games, but steered away from talk of curbing gun sales.
The shooter in El Paso posted a manifesto online consumed by racist hate. In one voice, our nation must condemn racism, bigotry, and white supremacy. These sinister ideologies must be defeated. Hate has no place in America. Hatred warps the mind, ravages the heart, and devours the soul. We must honor the sacred memory of those we have lost by acting as one people. Open wounds cannot heal if we are divided. Republicans and Democrats have proven that we can join together in a bipartisan fashion to address this plague. But there is so much more that we have to do. Now is the time to set destructive partisanship aside. So destructive, and find the courage to answer hatred with unity, devotion, and love. Our future is in our control. America will rise to the challenge. We will always have, and we always will, win. The choice is ours, and ours alone. It is not up to mentally ill monsters. It is up to us.
At this hour in New York City, community leaders are holding vigils against guns. Last month, 12 people were shot at a street party in Brownsville in a section of Brooklyn. Many asked, why isn't 12 killed in New York a mass shooting? That was after Mayor Bill de Blasio declined to use the term on Sunday, saying that phrase is usually reserved for a different type of situation. And that was Sunday a couple of weeks ago. Civil rights lawyer Norman Siegel is heading to that rally now.
We're having this rally to raise our voices in opposition to gun violence and to the increase in hatred and bigotry directed towards immigrants, racial minorities, and religious groups. It's time to speak. It's time to act. So we have an agenda for gun violence, and we have an agenda for reducing the bigoted, hateful comments. For example, elected officials, most notably President Donald Trump, they need to cease engaging in divisive, bigoted, hateful comments. The message today, enough. Let's stop the gun violence. Let's stop the mass shootings.
Is the problem guns or is the problem the president's provocations?
It's both. We're tying together tonight the fact that we haven't done anything with regard to universal background checks, with regard to banning assault weapons. But we also have to recognize, for example, I will say tonight, in the church bombing in Birmingham in September 1963, when the four girls were killed, it wasn't just those individuals who plotted and did the bombing, but the people in Birmingham who remained silent and allowed the climate of hatred to continue, they in part were part of the problem. Well, it's the same thing today. We have not only the president's divisive, bigoted comments, that we have Republicans and even sometimes Democrats who remain silent. Silence is not acceptable any longer.
As a civil rights attorney, you know that the gun rights are a Second Amendment right, and speech, no matter how bigoted, is protected.
Speech is protected, but we have a right to have our speech, to tell people to speak out in opposition to bigoted, hateful remarks. We're not making it a crime. And for elected officials to engage in bigoted hate remarks is totally unacceptable. People who continue to speak or remain silent who are elected officials should not be elected officials any longer, including the President of the United States.
And what about that Second Amendment right?
Second Amendment rights, the Supreme Court said there is a Second Amendment right, but that doesn't mean you can't reasonably regulate guns and the use of guns. For example, tonight I'm going to propose what I've been saying for years. We treat cars. You have to register your car. Every 3 years, you got to bring your car in. car is a dangerous vehicle. Well, guns are also. Why don't we have people register their guns? And then every 3 years, the person who's registered the gun, who owns the gun, bring the gun back. And let's look at it. That will make a big dent in the illegal underground traffic of guns being sold, especially in New York City, from places all around America. Right. We can do this. If we bring everyone together collectively, we can change it. I'm wearing a button tonight. In the old days, we shall overcome.
Civil rights lawyer Norman Siegel. Representative Adriano Aspayat is also attending a rally in Upper Manhattan, a neighborhood often plagued by shootings. He says the House has been sending bills to the GOP-controlled Senate with little effect.
We passed in the House two pieces of legislation, both important, H.R. 8 and H.R. 1112, that deal with background checks, enhancing background checks for those people that choose to purchase a gun. They have not been taken up in the Senate. In fact, before we were in the majority, for over 6.5 years when Republicans were there, not even a hearing was held on gun control. So it's many people like to approach it as not being a partisan issue, but I think it is a partisan issue. And so Mitch McConnell and the Senate should take up first and foremost the pieces of legislation that we sent over regarding background checks. Then you have the assault weapons ban, which I think was the common denominator in both of these tragedies, right? Both of them had assault weapons, an AK-47 in one in El Paso and an AR-15 in Dayton, Ohio. The Dayton, Ohio killer was able to fire 41 rounds in 32 seconds. Incredible. The average American should not have that kind of weapon in his or her hand. We must pass a ban on assault weapons. There is a guns grants bill that I've introduced. Many people have chosen, I have 40 sponsors for it. Many people have chosen to acquire guns through the ghost guns and their kits that are sent via mail. And they assemble these guns at home.
What's a ghost gun?
A ghost gun is a kit that you get in the mail, you assemble it at home, and you're able to circumvent the background check. So I'm asking for very stiff background check on ghost guns. You got the cool-off gap, which will allow for a 3-day waiting period for a person before they receive a handgun. These are killings that are tragic, but you know the kind of carnage and killings that are going on every day in urban America at the hands of handguns is even more egregious and more devastating. And so that we must address also access to handguns. So these are the critical pieces of legislation that we feel can have a direct impact on the problem. The Republicans have refused to take them up. In fact, President Trump goes further than that, and he wants to barter. He wants to trade for immigration reform. In the face of this crisis, this tragedy, with 22 people dead and 20-plus injured, he wants to play trade. Unheard of before, really highly insensitive. We should address this issue of gun control on itself, and we should do it as quickly as possible.
And Aspayat also focused on President Trump, who he says has been making the problem worse.
That's not a deterrent, you know, for any of these crimes. Those folks that perpetrated those massacres had already made their minds up that they could potentially die in the process. So the death penalty is not a deterrent for that not to occur again. We must really implement strict gun controls, eliminate access to assault weapons, ban them, right? Strict background checks. We must do the 3-day cool-off act for handguns. And that perhaps could be the beginning of an effort to really comprehensively address this gun problem issue in America.
What about the mentally ill? He says these people are mentally ill, that we need...
I think that we could have some compromise in so far as addressing mental health services and those people that are mentally ill and whether or not they should have access to weapons. And I think that there's room for compromise there, no question about it.
And bump stocks. He said, I'm the most successful gun-controlling president in recent years because I got bump stocks banned.
Well, you know, this person in Dayton, Ohio, had what they call a drum magazine. with about 100 bullets in there that fire, actually 41 of them, almost half of them, in 32 seconds. And so, yes, the bump stop is good, but assault weapons have really been the problem.
And now, finally, what about the president's words about his, you know, many people have criticized that this is happening, if not directly because of him. He must realize that the more you characterize people the way he has and use racist terminology the way he has, the more you're apt to get people to do things like this.
The killer in El Paso, Texas, alluded in his manifesto to President Trump. What more direct evidence do you have that his aggressive language, his very over-the-top rhetoric, is giving a green light and empowering some of the most radical fringe elements in the right to go ahead and perpetrate this kind of carnage? Certainly, he's somewhat responsible for this.
Mm-hmm. Andy, what advice would you give him as far as his statements in the future?
Well, you know, he should not, you know, he should lower his tone. He should act. My recommendation is act presidential. Even other Republican presidents never cuddle with those fringe aspects and sectors of the right wing radical society. They will never, you know, be seen with them. They wouldn't empower them. They wouldn't let them in the White House. They weren't around any of them. This guy has really made it his effort to really have them around his entire administration.
Do you feel he's, just a final question, do you feel he's his statements and his attitude towards the office has made this happen?
Well, look, you know, if you go into a theater and you yell fire, and children and seniors are trampled on and killed, I think your language was somewhat responsible for what occurred. I mean, the courts will determine that, but you have a level of responsibility to that.
And that's Representative Adriano Espaillat, who represents Upper Manhattan. And Brooklyn Borough President Eric Adams weighed in. He says that mass shootings get a lot of attention, but unlike the shootings in poor urban centers, they are not everyday occurrences. The problem, he says, are not long guns, but handguns.
There's several things we must do as a country. One, we have to clearly understand and define what a mass shooting is. A mass shooting is three or more people are shot at one incident. And when you properly define that, you can properly devise a solution to address the crises of gun violence. All gun violence in the country is not treated equally. The mass shootings in black and brown communities across this country, such as places like Chicago, Brownsville, and other parts of the country, they're not given the, number one, the same level of attention, the same level of resources, and the same level of urgency. If 11 people are shot on Park Avenue in Manhattan, it's treated differently if 11 people are shot on Park Place in Brooklyn. Our laws respond to areas where there are whites being shot or where there's an assault rifle and it's sensationalized. That is not the crisis in America, and we need to raise the temperature on the real crisis in America lies in handguns, the 9mm, the 38. It just so happened that those types of shootings occur in black and brown communities, and it does not receive the same level of attention.
Are there two things going on here, or is it part of the same problem? Are guns the ultimate problem here, or are there different problems at work in America today?
It is several problems that are taking place, but there's the reason you see a lack of urgency, because when you look at the numbers, yes, we have some awful shootings where there are mass shootings with individuals come out and they would shoot up a Las Vegas, shoot up a school, but the day-to-day urgency doesn't exist because those shootings would take place and then they would leave the front pages. If the types of shootings you see every day in the Chicago South Side type shootings was part of everyday mainstream America and mainstream communities, Congress would have long moved to take a serious look at gun violence. But since it only pops its ugly head every once in a while, unfortunately, it is not enough to raise the temperature. It's the same way we treated opioid abuse. When it was isolated like crack in the poorer parts of the city, there was no real urgency. Once it spilled over into the rural communities and the suburban suburbs, it was a different approach. And that is what you're seeing with guns in this country. There's a fixation, of course, with a gun culture that we have. But the unwillingness to move forward is that when you start tallying up who the victims are, the victims are black and brown people, and there's no real movement to resolve that. The level of concern to change that has not equaled the number of bodies that are outside the communities of color. Perfect example. Mm-hmm. Mass shooting is defined as three or more people shot at one incident. The federal government is giving us pushback by saying, well, if it's gang involved, we don't consider it a mass shooting. Then you basically are saying that if the mass shooting happens in a black community, then it's not really considered a mass shooting. Because that is where our violence comes from. It comes from a gang culture that has not been acknowledged. So since it's not acknowledged as a mass shooting, we don't get the resources that will help address the mass shooting that actually took place.
What is it about the 9mm, the 38, which are so ubiquitous across America? I mean, there's millions of them, and people carry them in many parts of the country. They don't in New York, but people here don't seem to have a problem getting them despite that, because they're so easy to get in other places. You just get on a bus to another state and buy it and come on back. Is there anything in the way of gun control laws that could be used to solve a problem that's so ubiquitous?
Action begins at home. And when we say New York, we have to be clear to define the difference between New York State and New York City. Because as I showed in the state government when I was a senator, that we had an assault rifle and a handgun. You can easily just walk right across the Westchester border, down Broadway, right into the Bronx. You still can get easy access to handguns, to assault rifles, right here in New York State. And the problem is different what takes place in New York City. New York City has some of the strongest gun laws in the country, but that is not the same in New York State. And the reason, again, I believe that the 9mm, the 38, the 380, all of those weapons have not been brought under control because they're taking the lives of black and brown people who live in poorer communities, and there's a lack of urgency of addressing the people who are victims of these shootings that we see. So if you add up all the shootings and the victims from assault rifles, and then compare it to all the victims that you see from 9mm and 38, you will have to ask yourself, why do we spend 90% of our energy on an assault rifle fight and 10% on the handgun fight? Because you look at the ethnicity of the victims, and that question will be answered.
I see. So I guess I'll answer my own question, but do you expect anything from this White House?
No, I don't. In fact, the danger of the White House is, I borrow from a term that's used in law enforcement called sleeper cells. Normally, it is identified by terrorist groups overseas. When they come into a country, they lay dormant until they independently act based on their hatred of America. We have a new form of sleeper cells in America. There are angry white supremacists who are laying dormant until they receive a signal or message that is all right to inflict their hate or violence. The alarm clock that's waking up these white supremacists is being rang in the White House. When you make comments about immigrants, when you make comments about the congressional delegation, they should go back to their country. When you make comments that people who come from Central or South America are committing crimes on our street, that violence, tone, and conversation is waking the sleeper cells of hate. And we cannot ignore the direct correlation between the repeated number of these mass shootings and the tone that's coming out of Washington.
Just to wrap up, what do you think we should do?
Action of this nature starts on the ground level, and that is why we're having the march and the vigil today. We have to have stronger laws around hate crimes. We're seeing an increase in hate crime, no matter who the victim is. We have to educate our families and young people about the problem of a gun culture. And lastly, we have to focus our attention where the problem lies. The problem in America lies in the handgun, and we can't continue to ignore that. Assault rifles and mass shootings with assault rifles may tug at our heart, but it is the handgun that is shooting our families and our loved ones in the heart. That is the crisis in America, and the attention must be placed there.
And that's Brooklyn Borough President Eric Adams.
And that's some of the news for Monday, August 5th, 2019. The news was produced with Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI Evening News, I'm Paul DiRienzo.
Well, when he's out late at night, if he's got his head on right, well, I lay you 9 to 5, he's walking with steel. Brother man say he's afraid of gangsters, messing with people just for fun. He don't want to be next, he got a family to protect. So just last week he bought himself a gun. Everybody got a pistol, everybody got a 45. And the philosophy